Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up tomorrow, Governor Patterson. Friday, Tom Suozzi defeated for re-election as Nassau County Executive. A lot to listen for every day beginning at 10. And flying cars, theme parks on the moon, automatic everything. There have been a lot of crazy predictions made about the 21st century. And if you think about it, our lives have fallen pretty short on a lot of them. Paul Milo looks at a lot of these predictions and where they fell flat in his new book, Your Flying Car Awaits, Robot Butlers, Lunar Vacations, and Other Dead Wrong Predictions of the 20th Century. He is an award-winning journalist and freelance writer who has written for BeliefNet, amongst other publications. Paul Milo, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you for having me.
So this is a lot of fun. And you say that you wrote this book because as a child, you were expecting things to be different, cooler, by 2010.
Oh, absolutely. I grew up, I was very much into things like Star Trek, and I even had a telescope, and I was looking forward to the day when I would be working in space. I thought that was supposed to happen 10 years ago, as a matter of fact, and obviously here I am with most of the rest of the human race.
And maybe some of the most memorable images from Once Upon a Time involved what cities would look like, and this is in your book. What were some of the predictions?
This city was supposed to have a giant dome over Midtown. It was supposed to be about a mile over New York City. It was supposed to be about 2 miles high. And this wasn't...
They couldn't even afford a dome for Citi Field.
I know. Well, this was back in the mid-60s, and they maybe had a little bit more money for this. And there was an interesting economic rationale as well. The person who came up with the plan was named R. Buckminster Fuller, a very famous... visionary slash architect.
Most famous for the geodesic dome.
Exactly. And that's what was supposed to be over the city, protecting us from the rain right now. And his rationale was that if you built this dome, it would pay for itself in 10 years because you wouldn't have to remove snow from the streets. So it wasn't completely loopy.
Yeah. So do we want to really live like that?
I probably wouldn't. The other rationale too was that by now the skies were supposed to be hopelessly polluted, and we were supposed to be under these domes that were going to protect us from all the gunk in the atmosphere. So
I think they do build a Bucky Fuller geodesic dome at the Burning Man Festival every year.
That probably sounds right.
Listeners, when you were growing up, what did you think the future would look like that it doesn't? 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692. Maybe you read these things in the backs of comic books, or maybe your parents were telling you about them, or your pie-in-the-sky middle school science professors, who knows. But call in for Paul Milo and tell us what you thought would happen by the year 2009 or 2010 that hasn't yet happened. Your Flying Car Awaits is the name of the book. Robot Butlers, Lunar Vacations, and Other Dead Wrong Predictions of the 20th Century. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Flying cars in particular?
Absolutely. There are people who are working on this, and they have viable working prototypes. There's a gentleman from Canada, as a matter of fact, who's dedicated the last 40 years to building one, and brilliant guy. I mean, he's made a couple of fortunes in various industries, and he's serious. It's called the Sky Car, and if you check online, you'll see a lot of stuff come up about this.
So let's see. I remember a TV show that had flying cars.
I want a new Fooderacusackle.
A new Fooderacusackle? Jane, we cannot afford it. No. Absolutely.
Well, they may not have been able to afford the Fooderacusack in the Jetsons household, but they had the flying cars.
Absolutely. That was a given. They had houses that were about 5,000 feet in the air, too, right?
Right. And I guess some of the most useful future predictions, you say, came out of a late 1960s Walter Cronkite TV special on the household of the future. So was our household supposed to look like today, according to Uncle Walter?
Well, for starters, easy cleanup on the furniture because it was disposable. Your couch would be inflatable, and if it got messy, you just tossed it. I guess people kind of fetishize the whole Dixie cup culture back then, the whole idea that, you know, once you're done with it, just throw it out, and they were extending that to housewares.
And now the households of the future are things where everything is reusable.
Right, right. It's kind of an interesting, I wouldn't say we've gone 180, but it's an interesting take.
What else? Anything else from that?
Yeah, we were supposed to have sonically operated dishwashers, too. You put your dishes in, and you flick a switch, and these sound waves basically reduce your dishes to this goo. And when it was time for the next meal, you'd flip a switch and it recreated, kind of reshaped the goo into these plates that never had to be washed. Never, you know, no, it was kind of like a no fuss, no muss, high tech solution to clean up.
Although I still think it's amazing that with actual dishwashers, you don't have to scrub the gunk off the plate. The dishwasher actually does it.
We have come somewhat close to some of the things that we're talking about back then. Sure, sure.
And everything would be disposable. Also, there was something called a brain house that was believed in as far back as the 1950s.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is pretty interesting. You were basically going to get up in the morning. Your house was going to the computer brain was going to wake you up. It was going to decide what you were supposed to eat for that day. It was going to cook the meal for you. Obviously, it was temperature controlled. It was in one variation of this, too. There was a house that could kind of rotate slowly to catch the sun's rays. In other words, it would kind of like face east in the morning, and it would rotate to face west in the afternoon as the sun was setting. So there was a lot of interesting things there.
So machines that would cook your food for you. Maybe something like this?
I need to bore you. Hoverboard. He's on a
hoverboard! Oh, okay. I thought that was going to be the Jetsons robot, Rosie.
That's okay, but we were supposed to have hoverboards, too, so.
So, and a hoverboard does what?
I think a hoverboard hovers.
Yes. I guess could have figured that out. Caroline, in Westville, what did you think life was going to be like by now?
Well, I have a very clear memory of being in second grade in Mrs. Davidson's class and reading my Scholastic Weekly Reader and seeing the jetpack that you would put on your shoulders, and it would take you wherever you wanted to go.
There you go, and that was supposed to come. And wait a minute, Ab in Brick is calling specifically about the hoverboards. Ab, it sounds like you're in a hoverboard now.
Oh, I'm pretty upset about that. It's almost 2015, and I have no hoverboard.
I'm kind of ticked off about that myself, actually.
Also, hydrated pizzas. And
yes.
My question actually is, my question was, in your book, do you speak about the 50s cartoons, like Bugs Bunny cartoons? They used to have like these ridiculous cartoons about the future, where what would cars look like, and they would have obnoxious things like a giant air conditioner or a giant refrigerator in the back of the car, so you can just drive around and eat whatever you want or something. It was so out of this world that it's like, when you're a kid, it was amazing, but I don't know.
Right. You know what? I made a couple of pop culture allusions, because a lot of the futurism, I mean, it happened on two levels. I mean, there was the pop culture futurism, like the stuff that cropped up in the Bugs Bunny cartoons, and then there was a serious academic futurism. This was a real discipline. It still is, as a matter of fact. Not Bugs Bunny specifically, but I do refer to the Back to the Future movies and Marty's hoverboard in my book.
And, of course, the hoverboard was from Back to the Future. Here's something from another movie. Would we remember it?
It is the distant future, the year 2000.
We are robots.
The world is very different ever since the robotic uprising of the mid-90s. There is no more unhappiness.
Affirmative.
We no longer say yes. Instead, we say affirmative.
Yes, affirmative.
Finally, robotic beings rule the world. The humans are dead. The humans are dead.
Can you name that piece?
Oh, wow, you're putting me on the spot.
It's from Flight of the Conchords.
Oh, I missed that episode, obviously.
So there you go. Still happening on Flight of the Conchords. But the there's, you know, there's serious stuff in here too, right? I mean, there's
absolutely
genetic engineering. There's Paul Mohler building the Mohler sky car. There's global food scarcity that you refer to, possibly due to overpopulation.
Right. That's one of the more serious predictions. I mean, you couldn't help but go for a jokey tone when writing about material like this, but some of this is pretty serious. Fortunately, the scarcities weren't nearly as bad as they thought they were going to be back in the 70s. There was a gentleman named Paul Ehrlich, who wrote a book called The Population Bomb. And
still alive, still writing.
Oh, sure, absolutely. And he really, a lot of people who made predictions back then kind of hedged their bets, and he didn't. I mean, he came out and said in 1970 that people are going to be starving by the billions, not millions, billions, by 1980, 85 at the latest. And the fact that we haven't, obviously, is encouraging, but we still have people starving to death. I mean, we haven't solved this problem by any means.
On the other hand, we have people writing on our comments page saying, I thought by the year 2010 we'd have universal health care.
Right.
I thought by the year 2010 we'd have a Second Avenue subway.
You know, I was listening... I was listening to your previous guest, and that struck me as a very interesting conversation as related to my book, because universal health care at one point in the mid to late 60s was going to be the least of it. They really believed that the government was going to be taking an ever larger role in providing us with necessities. I mean, one of the things that was widely predicted was a guaranteed living wage. This isn't a minimum wage. This is the government ensuring that everybody has money in their pockets.
Right. Well, Richard Nixon proposed a negative
absolutely
income tax. So that's how far we've come since the 1970s. Steve in Stony Brook is going to get our last 20 seconds. Steve, what do you remember?
Hi, Brian. Yes. I'm finishing my PhD in chemical physics, so very hard math. We use nuclear magnetic resonance. I grew up on Star Trek TNG. I was sure we would have teleportation. Now that I'm
really
all into the science and the math, we don't get enough funding, and we don't have enough brains, big brains, thinking about this kind of stuff to get us there, because the problems are really hard.
And Steve, I need to beam you out because we're out of time. Paul Milo is the author of Your Flying Car Awaits, Robot Butlers, Lunar Vacations, and Other Dead Wrong Predictions of the 20th Century. It was fun. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Lisa Allison, Jody Evergan, Paige Coward, and Shubha Bala produced this program. Intern help from Rachel Senator. Our senior producer is Megan Ryan. That's Debbie Fountain at the audio controls. At least we have the internet. I'm Brian Lehrer.